You're listening to
Twisted Tropes.
Familiar settings.
Wild new tales.
Now on with the story.
Scandals and Scavengers, a post-apocalyptic Regency romance. Episode 1, Preparations and Protagonists, or Not So Humble Beginnings.
And so it came to pass 300 years ago, the apocalypse arrived. Not from the collapse of the environment, not from the ambition of kings or generals, but the hubris of the young. An influencer decided to read from an ancient tome as a joke on a live stream. The simple incantation, multiplied across hundreds of thousands of speakers worldwide, created a series of rifts to the infernal realms, what would come to be known as the Time of Tearing. Demons poured out, nukes were launched. It was, in fact, a full-blown kerfuffle. Of course, in the aftermath, there was about a century of the most beastly behavior. People fighting for resources, making war bands and traipsing about in the most impractical and immodest costumes, bashing each other about the heads with spiked sticks and such. Eventually, a warlord who would later be known as Queen Lizzie took over the fair metropolis now known as Neo-Britannia. As she settled her followers, she discovered a perfectly preserved home, the home of an ordinary woman who would be known henceforth as Saint Linda. In it, Queen Lizzie found perfectly preserved accounts of a more civilized time, accounts that would become the blueprints of a new society, the Ostenets and the Bridgertenets. And now, after 200 years of cultivating a stable and enlightened society, once again Neo-Britannia's most cherished season begins, the Marriage Mart. And with it, our story. The halls of the manor are quiet, but then again they have been for several weeks, ever since your return. Your first introduction to your late husband's country estate. A pastiche of work over many years, its main entry is based on the remains of a pre-tearing building, which lends its name to the estate. The rest of Afla House expands to a comfortable size, with rooms for several guests, a lavish master suite, and plenty of space for servants. Not that there's been much need for those since your arrival. Only the 5 eldest servants, those that had more loyalty to your husband than fear of a wildlander, stayed with you. It is one of these that breaks the silence, pulling you from your thoughts and back into the moment.
Sir, Mrs. Worley has prepared a midday snack for you. She was concerned that the refreshments at these sorts of affairs are usually more frilly than filling, and wanted to make sure you didn't go hungry. Shall I bring it in here, or would you prefer to partake while we get you ready?
The speaker is your butler, Lucas Tremaine. The dusky, blue-skinned dwarf stands, as always, in his thick leather sleeveless overcoat over a dark blue velour tracksuit and elaborate cravat. As is his habit, he idly tugs on the end of an elaborately braided white mustache, almost as if he's trying to even the ends out to match the well-maintained and equally elaborately braided beard.
Thank you, Lucas. Please, have her bring it in here. I'll partake in whatever I can while I'm getting ready.
As you wish, sir. We can bring it up to the bedroom where we have your attire laid out, as you requested.
That would be great. Thank you very much.
Not a worry, sir.
And he leaves you. Yeah. How is Samuel doing?
A bit of a culture shock, all of this, seeing what my late husband has left behind, and just getting used to the whole routine of it all, the decorum and things like that, where while I was being coached by my late husband, it really is now sinking in that I am the lord of this manor, and these people look up to me, and there's a level of responsibility I'm not used to, and everywhere I look is just a little bit of a reminder of the loss.
Especially the family portrait that is over the mantle of, granted, his family. You hadn't been included in one because of the recent nature of your nuptials. So, anything you would like to do, or are we heading upstairs to get you ready? You've been cordially invited to Lady Southmere's garden party to open up the season.
I will head upstairs to get ready, prepare myself both in appearance and mentally. And it would be very rude, and I know I would upset Wilhelmina if I didn't partake in what she made for me.
As you get to your suite, a few things sort of catch your eye. A, the extravagant nature of all the furnishings still are somewhat grating on your nerves. Even out in your home, when it was settled out in the wildlands, it was rustic and serviceable. Everything was more practical than ornamental. This is just perplexing. Why so many pillows? Who needs that many pillows? But Wilhelmina has prepared a very serviceable, very practical meal for you. She has adapted to your tastes. There is simply a chunk of cheese, a chunk of some kind of roasted meat. You're not intimately familiar with all the varieties that you have available to you. And just a torn off husk of bread and a large pitcher of pure water.
Well, that's extremely kind. I think absentmindedly, I'll just start chewing away at the bread and take one chunk of meat, bite through with my fangs, and just absentmindedly chew that through as I'm looking at whatever outfit they've prepared for me.
Well, they would be taking cues from you what your comfort
excellent.
Is. So Lucas will help get you dressed. And as you gaze into the mirror, what do we see?
So in the mirror, staring back at me, will be a 6'2" dragonborn. Scales that are a iridescent blue shimmering in the low level of the light in this bedroom. Eyes, a pale blue fire burning where the pupils would normally be. Currently, in the scales, especially amongst the face, where normally on a human or a humanoid there'd be scars, it's just a little pale blue, much lighter in color, tracking along where perhaps beasts or some sort have left their marks on him. While he's in the manor and not being seen socially, it's a very casual outfit, kind of scraps put together, something he's been accustomed to and something that's comfortable, furs, cheaply tanned leathers and things like that, whatever they could put together, and it's still something that makes him feel comfortable in this unfamiliar setting.
Now, for what has been laid out for you to go to the garden party, are we going rugged woodland casual, or are we going to try to dress to impress?
I think a little bit of both. So Samuel, remembering how dashing his husband would look in that military garb, trying to dress up as much as we could, he will take a little bit fancier boots, some actual nice white trousers. However, on the upper body, he does want to make a bit of a statement and not forget who he is. So while it will be a plain shirt, but over that will be a fur vest instead of a typical overcoat. As well as he will be keeping a necklace of various fangs as an accent piece.
Making a statement. Now, because this is polite society, but it is polite society in an extraordinarily dangerous environment, you are allowed to go armed to functions. Will you be carrying any visible weaponry?
Did my husband, as a captain, have any sort of like honorary sword that was less for fighting and more for decorum?
Yes, he definitely had a fairly ornate, the closest we would say would be a saber, mm-hmm. but it was a little heavier and a little more choppy than slashy. But yes, there would be an ornate saber equivalent.
Okay, I will wear that for his memory as well as for the decorum of the matter, but I know that I would not be using that should a fight break out.
Excellent. So it doesn't take Lucas long to get you dressed. He is fussing over you in a not entirely paternal, but there is a degree of care. And you had never met this man before you got to this estate. So the fact that he has attached himself and made your happiness and comfort such a priority, it says a lot about him, or at least from, you know, your perspective.
Mm-hmm. I do wish you'd reconsider. We can get one of the carriages.
No, honestly, Lucas, I will feel more comfortable riding in myself.
Mr. Roy, it's no trouble.
I mean, no disrespect to Roy's skills or anything like that. This is truly for my comfort. And again, this is a bit of a statement. I am who I am.
And a statement it will be, sir. Well, we'll get Maurice saddled and ready to meet you at the front door. All right. I will leave you to your final preparations. I do hope you enjoy. Now we will meet you at the city estate after the festivities. Everything has been sent ahead. So
excellent. And Lucas, thank you for everything, truly. And Evan, if it would be okay if I could actually knock off a point of wealth while I'll be socializing tonight, please make sure you and the other four, while you're setting up the estate, get yourself something nice to eat as well.
Well, thank you, sir. The similarities are uncanny at times. Taking enough of your time, sir. We'll have your mount prepared.
And he's just tugging on the mustache, like clearly, like grateful but awkwardly uncomfortable. This is very strange for him. Insofar as you're a stranger, you definitely get the feeling that there was a deep and profound connection to the whole family, and especially to your late husband. Anything you want to do, prepare, anything like that before you go and get on your mount?
Nothing really to prepare. I think I actually will go back down to that drawing room or wherever that family portrait was, and actually I'll spend the rest of my time just reminiscing to myself, staring up at it.
Alrighty. It is, you do know a little bit of the family history. It is the departed parents, your late husband, Henry. And you see the older brother, Nathaniel Drake, the Baron of Dayton, having taken over the title from the parents when they passed. Not a lot said, really, by Henry about his brother other than about his existence. There was never open hostility, but there just wasn't a lot said. Almost like there wasn't a lot to say about their relationship. So take that to mean what you will.
Have we received any words, except I'm assuming that the expected condolences and things like that from Nathaniel since Henry's passing?
No, not even the expected condolences.
Ooh. Yikes.
Drama.
Yeesh.
Noting that.
Yeah. So that is what you have.
Yeah, I think that's it for me. I'll prepare for a special event this evening.
All right. Mr. Roy brings Maurice around. He is your faithful Lyran. What's a Lyran?
Yes, you may ask.
Good question.
Yeah.
He is a effectively what we would consider a dire lion.
Cool. Oh.
Sick.
However, he is gifted with organic steel teeth, claws, and his mane is made of the finest steel wire.
Oh.
That sounds painful.
He is incredible. A statement mount. rocking up to the garden party on this is going to leave an impression, but I feel like that's kind of what you're going for.
So good.
Is this my first time meeting Maurice?
Oh, no, no. Okay. No, Maurice came with you.
Oh, okay. Good.
You know Maurice. So.
Does Maurice speak?
No. Why would a Lyran speak?
Why would a white tiger say?
Stay tuned for answers to that and more.
Did any of you take druid levels? I don't think so.
Damn it. One more question. Is this the first event of the season?
It is.
All right, thank you.
So this will be some people's debuts. A low impact kind of event.
No stakes involved.
Yes.
And is Henry's death public knowledge?
You would assume so.
It was not something we hid.
He was the governor.
Okay.
He came back to officially be sworn in and given his title as Baron of Winchester, and he returned to effectively govern the newly acquired lands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will just climb aboard Maurice with well-practiced mounting and just give him a soft pat along the steel wool mane.
it's not like steel wool. It's like weirdly like it's almost like really really it's time, almost like nice really straight. Really fine like aircraft
stainless
cable kind
steel.
Of.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hair.
Yeah.
It's yeah. comforting, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it does function a bit like armor for his neck, which is great. Yeah. And you bound off into the late afternoon sun, heading towards the Southmere residence. But we're going to leave you on the road, and we're going to move a little deeper into the city, into the back garden of a very nice estate.
Again!
There's a grunt and the sound of whistling chains and steel clashing with steel. Blows rain down for what seems like an eternity, but in reality is only a scant minute. You break, and the Minotaur across from you leans on the giant knurled iron war staff in his hands as he catches his breath. Whew, dang. You clearly been practicing.
Yes, I have. And I almost got you that time.
Yeah, darn tootin', you nearly took one of the old noggin spikes off of there, Ms. Edgewater. Gonna be showing those regiment boys who's boss in no time.
Oh, thank you so much, Captain.
I told you don't have to call me Captain.
Axel Greyhorn has been your combat teacher, or fencing instructor, as you call him, for about 10 years now. He was a childhood friend of your father. And he has become something of a fixture in your family's life, even more so after the death of your mother.
Are you sure I can't interest you in starting some firearm training? I have a real nice carbine that I think you'd be a natural with.
You know, that does make some sense because I'm quite good with the hunting rifle, but when am I ever going to use such a handgun?
I mean... a carbine is a rifle there.
Oh,
Ms. Edgewater. Yep. So
okay,
but,
I probably should have known that. But I
don't worry. I mean, you'll probably have someone to take care of all your weapons because your dad says that any day now you're gonna be getting your first command. I have no idea what that facial expression means.
Was marriage. I am going to any day now. Find the perfect match and be wedded in bliss.
You're going to be in a battle either way. You know.
What?
Never mind. Just old military guy talk. Hey, can I get you a glass of water? We've been working for a while.
I would love one. Thank you so much, Captain.
And he puts down the giant war staff, and with surprisingly gentle and dexterous hands, he pours two crystal little goblets of water and hands you yours first, of course. Oh, well, I think we should probably call it a day because you have something you gotta go to, right?
I do a garden party. I was invited to Lady Southmere's garden party. I'm very excited. It's the first event of the season. Everyone will be there.
Oh, sounds terrible. I know you get excited about all that, but... Give me a good drink and a good book and a fire, and I'm a happy old guy.
Of course, that's a wonderful evening, but you are right. It will be terrible. I am sure there are plenty of people that will need my assistance in following the proper social etiquette.
I mean, you got commanding officer just written all over you, kid. But I mean, I'm sorry, Miss Edgewater. I forgot. Sometimes I get a little too. I'm used to the battalion.
It's all right. We've known each other quite a long time. It's okay.
It's at this point that you hear a shout from the door leading into the drawing room. Drips! Gladstone needs your help again! You turn to see your younger brother, Alistair, already turning back into the house, clearly more interested in whatever book he is reading than the needs of your older brother. Unlike you, he tends to lean towards his winter aspect, a fact evident in his fashion sense. Not severe, per se, but definitely a far cry from warm or welcoming.
I've told you not to call me that!
I know! He's upstairs, in case you're wondering.
Well, I wasn't wondering, but thank you anyway.
Thank you anyway. You go upstairs, and you find your older brother Gladstone in his room, his valets, Chad and Raymond Parker, looking at each other nervously outside the door. He has a number of coats and cravats laid out on his bed in clear disarray. He wears a simple white shirt, gray multi-pocketed patched-together pants, spiked steel-plated riding boots, and a neon green vest with bright silver bands.
Is that what you're wearing to the party?
Oh, well, you know I've never been good with colors, so I could use any help you might have.
Sure,
I
mean, get rid of that and the other thing.
But, I mean, I think I like my vest. I think it makes a statement. It's an eye-catching conversation piece.
Sure does. You will not get run over by any erraticorns in the street.
Well, I mean, that's a side benefit, but I hope I was hoping to catch the eye of a young lady tonight.
Oh, which young lady?
I mean, let's start with having one give me a second look, and then we'll get particular.
Oh.
So are you going to help me get dressed or not?
Oh, yes. So, really, you do, just maybe not that waistcoat. I think perhaps this one over here.
You know,
the dark leather.
For some reason, I feel like I have to trust you when y'all talk like that. All right.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah, sure you don't. All right. So you get Gladstone dressed somewhat more appropriately. He favors his summer aspect. He honestly, very handsome for an Eladrin, like very striking features, where Alistair drifts towards a frailer build and a more academic appearance. Gladstone leans into the big, broad, striking man about town sort of thing. He is not gifted intellectually. And also technically colorblind, just sort of unfortunate. So you get him sort of presentable. We're not going to say fashionable, but we will say presentable. Just then, your father Albion pokes his head in.
Edgewater, y'all ain't dressed yet. Gladstone's got all the help he needs getting dressed. You go on and get. We have to leave in half an hour or we're going to be unfashionably late.
Daddy, don't worry. I'm going to be ready in time. I have maids for this sort of thing.
I swear if your mama was still around, she'd probably have something to say about all this. But all right.
I love
you,
Daddy.
I love you too, Edgewater. Now just get ready.
You retire to your room and you have your sort of chief handmaid, Clarabelle.
All right, so what are we thinking? Are we gonna catch a boat tonight?
Oh, I don't think I'll have time to catch a boat just this evening. Can you imagine all of the faux pas that will be happening at the very first party of the season? I will be so busy. But it is a garden party, so I believe the dress with the blue and green flowers on it. That would be a good one.
All right, sorry, you lost me at faux pas, but I don't know what that is. But, oh, all right, we'll get you just pretty as a picture. All right, let's get you ready. Miss, I don't mean to nudge, but I mean, you might want to look out for your own interests just a little bit. If everybody's making mistakes, that can only make you look better.
Oh, of course, but that wouldn't be kind of me. I must share my knowledge with the others. And once everyone is on the same page in society, it will all fold together so neatly as a lovely little book.
You got some big ideas, Miss Edgewater. Anyway, let's get you all dolled up and ready to go.
So what are you looking at in the mirror as Clarabelle fusses and primps and preens?
So what you see, it's hard really kind of to tell what might be under all of what are to us. The plastic bags that you use to pick up dog poop, that they're nice green and blue. And they've all been twisted into rosettes, like, all over this dress. With some extra ones at the shoulders to be extra big and poofy here. Probably underneath it's some sort of leather something. But it still looks like a Regency, as perfect as you could get, a Regency evening gown. Or afternoon gown, I should say. Not quite evening. And it's just covered in these hideous plastic poop bags.
Beyond the dress, who is wearing the dress?
Oh, and Edgewater is a lovely Eladrin girl. She is about 23 years of age. She's been out for about 3 years now with no prospects. But she is quite attractive. It's very hard to say. She has lovely auburn hair, and she has rosy cheeks and luscious full lips and everything, but for some reason no one seems to be approaching her with marriage prospects.
Who could imagine why? Well, you get yourself situated and you get all both your father, your two brothers, and yourself bundled into the ooha.
The ooha? The what?
The ooha.
The what? One more time?
It is.
Why does Johnny get all of these references?
It's a big square carriage.
Yeah, yeah. It's silver and orange. Yeah.
It's a U-Haul minus the L.
Oh,
okay.
Oh my God.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
I didn't promise, Classy.
Oh, my God. This is beautiful. No, that's great.
And you head off to Lady Southmere's residence. Is there anything you need to discuss with your brothers or your father on the way?
Oh, I'm absolutely making sure that they're sitting correctly in the carriage, back straight, no crossing of legs. Absolutely, Alistair tried to be the first one into the carriage, but then he can't help me get out of the carriage, so I had to stop him from being first in so that I could get in first and come out second.
There are mixed reactions. Your father Albion sort of has a bit of a sort of a shake of the head and a smirk, but you seem to enjoy this, so he's gonna go along with it. Gladstone looks to you for everything. He is a very attentive pupil, even if he does not retain very much.
Great.
He tries real hard. Alistair is usually inspecting the back of his skull when you talk because he rolls his eyes back so hard. He does not care at all.
He will when no one wants to marry him.
Ouch.
Suits me just fine.
What will you do with your life if you don't have a good wife or husband?
I don't know. Maybe have time to read and improve myself and maybe discover things.
I can do all of that and more and have a spouse. Hmm.
Oh, how's that going for you?
Ooh. Father, I hope this evening goes quite well, don't you?
Yes. Now stop provoking your sister. Can we all just have a nice carriage ride, please? Oh.
And with that, we're gonna swing off across the park. We're not leaving the family though. We're just going to a different part of it.
Somewhere across the main park, we enter the home of Edgewater's uncle, Edison Sparks. He is the elder brother. He's Albion's older brother, and he inherited the family title and is situated a bit, just a bit over his brother, because they are in the Viscount tier. That does not mean his home is any less chaotic. The eldest son, Clayton, is berating his valet that the chainmail sleeve of his coat has not been polished fully, while the twins, Myrtle and Maddie, are fawning over various earrings made of flattened metal discs with crenellated edges, trying to choose which assortment best complements their half-elven features. Of course, this is all happening down one hall. Down around the corner, towards the back of the house, closer to the servants' stairs, we see an elderly gnome woman, Ms. Trudy Pothole, knock on a plain door and enter almost immediately.
I'm sorry. Trudy Pothole?
It's a great name.
I'm furious that that's not my character's name.
It's pronounced Pothole.
Pothole?
Sure.
Incredible. We're bringing her everywhere with
us. Yeah, I'm writing
that
down.
We're going to be hitting that plosive hard.
Yeah. Wow.
Miss Mary, I've mended your dress for you, and I hope you'll pardon the presumption, but I added a bit of decoration for you.
Oh.
Everybody deserves to feel pretty, child.
Yeah.
Now, let's get you ready.
Okay, thanks, Trudy.
And here we find the ever so excited Miss Mary Smith.
Yeah, I'm currently... I have like a really tiny window that's impossible to clean. So it's always kind of grimy looking. I'm looking sadly out of it, but also in a like a kind of unapproachable way. But Trudy never lets me like do that for some reason.
Yeah. For Trudy, knocking is just what you do before you walk through a door. There is no other part of that process.
Yep. Yeah. She does that a lot. She's kind of my best friend.
Oh, no.
She does, of this household, she does take the greatest interest.
She's kind of nice to me sometimes.
She herself is largely overlooked by the other members of your family. Yeah. Given your position, you would hesitate to use that word. But she's also overlooked due to her advanced years and the rambling nature of her stories. Mm. But anyway, she holds out your dress to you and helps you get ready because you are included in the invitation. And Edison has made it clear that you will be attending.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I tend to, my health prevents me sometimes from attending such functions, but the first event of the season, I am. Obligated.
yeah. And why is that? Why do you have to follow what Edison says?
I was taken on as a ward many, many, many years ago. And that's so nice. Honestly, so nice of them. So nice of them. Because they didn't have to. They didn't have to. And everyone knows that it was very nice of them to do that for me.
Yes, Edison's wife, Marguerite, never misses an opportunity to remind everyone and yourself
fucking Marguerite.
About that.
I'd take Trudy over Marguerite any day. My God.
You think that's actually a popular sentiment over
most
people who are not blood
related?
Yeah,
yeah. So far I've been out on the Ton, technically in the Marriage Mart, for a good chunk of years now. They're hoping at some point I bring in some money or a title or something like that. And due to my temperament, it hasn't happened yet. And so there's starting to be a bit of increased mutterings about, you know, helping out the family that I was very graciously included in as a baby or whatever. And, you know... The pressure's starting to build somewhat for my participating.
It's also a little galling given the fact that while there are the three children, Clayton is actually 3 years your junior.
Yeah.
So
he's an idiot. I didn't say it out loud though. I kept that thought inside. Goddamn.
Yeah. Clayton is a bit of a dandy. He does take after his mother quite a bit.
Yeah.
He's also not the kindest of people to the household staff.
No.
Now that the dress is mended, mm-hmm. what are we looking at? Who are you? What are we seeing in the mirror?
So
who is Mary
I'm
Smith?
Getting dressed. I mostly dress myself because Trudy, you know, she is itty bitty and so old. And she's busy talking. So I'm going to dress myself mostly. The dress is mostly repaired off like hand-me-downs, despite the fact that I'm like one of the oldest kids in this sort of family. So it's a lot of like layers. Layers are big for me. I'm wearing layers on layers for my skirts, layers on layers for the top. It's a lot of like what is trying to approximate lace, but it's like plastic fishing net and like, nice. You know, bits of rubber detailing, and the skirt is just every other kind of fabric, whatever, kind of loosely piled on top of each other. So lots of layers, very modest kind. I'm covered neck to toe. Yeah.
And to give you a little pop of color,
mm-hmm.
Trudy has given you a sort of a wide waist sash with a nice bow in the back.
Yes.
It is yellow, mm-hmm. and very waterproof.
Yep.
Police line, do not cross.
Yes. 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 Yeah. I tend to, even if the clothes I'm wearing used to be fashionable or colorful, they kind of aren't anymore for the most part. And I also have the shoes I wear are very thin soled, so that I can creep about in a kind of subtle fashion. And I'm wearing also a necklace that has an emblem of Saint Linda on it.
Excellent.
Yes.
Do you have a little friend?
Oh yeah, I was wondering about that. Yes, I think I have I'll maybe leave it to you if it makes more sense to have an actual like little mouse friend or like a clockwork mouse friend.
I would say you do have an actual little mouse.
Yeah,
it is
excellent.
the thing that visited you second most other than Trudy.
Yep.
In the house. And now he lives here with you.
Yeah. God, I love this mouse. He kind of, I have a lot of pockets in my huge skirts, my layered skirts. yeah. And so he kind of, you know, nestles into one of the pockets. All pockets. It's barely anything but pockets. The shape is, you know, lumpy.
lumpy pockets.
It's giving lumpy.
It's giving lumpy chic. Wow.
Nice.
Last season's lumpy chic.
Oh. God, what a horrible adjective.
Oh, where is my head at? I almost forgot. A young man stopped by and asked that this be delivered to you. Mm. I said it was the seed you were looking for your little friend.
And she takes out a tiny little box and hands it to you.
I best go and see if any of the others need my help. But just be sure you're downstairs so you're ready to go. Right?
You got it, girl.
Girl, no.
That's my girl. This is why I don't talk to people at functions, guys.
Girl, no one's called me girl in a while.
she hops up on the bed and gives you a little pat on the cheek.
Have fun tonight.
Yeah, you're a riot, Trudy. Really. see you later.
Oh, you.
So she hops down and goes to see if the other members of the family need help getting ready.
Mm.
Invariably, Marguerite will be throwing a fit. the box.
Mm, yes.
You know what's really in the box.
Ooh, I open it.
Yeah. There's a little bit of seed on top of the false bottom.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Okay. I check to make sure, you know, that everyone's busy being the worst.
Hard in this house.
Yep. And then I pop open the secret bottom.
There is a stack of hydro notes. Hydro notes would be the way that access to the Grand Reservoir is denotated, and you don't actually trade, bottles of water to people. You give people notes of certain volume.
Okay.
So these are all they're all very used. They're sort of plasticated. They're a thin plastic,
okay. Yeah.
And they have various sort of colorful designs on them, mm-hmm. but all of them will have like 4FL, 8FL, 12FL. So these will be basically your currency. And
excellent.
You have a stack that is a little more than a quart.
Okay.
So not bad.
Do I know who delivered this to me?
Oh, yeah. Nicodemus, your assistant. Well, excellent. Maybe not your assistant, Mary.
Oh, interesting.
And it just has a little note.
Mm.
Second half came through. N.
All right, Nicodemus. I would call him my friend, but that would be unprofessional. So it's just Trudy and the Mouse.
I mean, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much.
Excellent. All right, I will give my mouse friend, whose name is going to come up any minute now. Mm-hmm. I give him the little seeds because, you know, he's not going to get a lot to eat tonight. And I'm going to tuck most of those notes. I'm assuming I have like the world's most secret loose floorboard of all time.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to tuck some of them in there, and I'm going to maybe put like one or two in one of my many pockets.
Excellent.
Just in case.
All righty. Cool, cool. Do you have anything you'd like to do? Anyone you'd like to visit? Or are you just going to wait to depart with the rest of your family? You only have about a half an hour, so you're kind of bound to the house.
Yeah, I think I probably will just finish getting ready. I'm going to, you know, slip a dagger or two in my pockets or a garter. I don't know. Like my tire rubber garters.
Uncomfortable.
Chafes so bad.
Peel that off with your teeth.
Well, you have like a claws and stuff, right? This could work.
We haven't met yet, but may I introduce you to my fangs?
This escalated in a horny fashion.
Yeah. And then. Yeah, I have my hair kind of tied back in a very severe bun, and
just so we get a picture, we know that you are lumpy of silhouette.
Yeah,
but yeah. In terms
mostly
of
mostly the skirts,
but
mostly
in terms of actually, like, are you a similarly a dragonborn? What are we looking at here?
Oh yes, I'm a half elf, kind of in like the most Austin like rude way. You'd call her mousy. You know,
nice.
Just a little nondescript, a little plain. Her hair is kind of like a light brown. Her eyes are brown. She's got kind of like, she's squinting a lot. She's kind of like, kind of got a frown line all the time. Her mouth is turned down a lot of the time. Just kind of like looks tense, semi/definitely unapproachable. Hence the lack of marriage, and she is one of those people that is just hard. It's hard to remember her face. Kind of, she's kind of looks like a bunch of people, but not in any memorable kind of way. Almost.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah. And it honestly did work out because Edison is an elf, Mm-hmm. And Marguerite is human, and mm-hmm. their offspring are half-elves. So yes, you do, in a weird way, sort of fit in with the family.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, as fit in as you can.
Yes.
As you assemble in the lobby, comparatively, everyone is dressed so much better than you.
Yeah, yeah. Real Cinderella vibes here.
Yeah, yeah. And you make your way to the carriage.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, everyone else gets in. And then they go around the sort of long, like elongated rectangular, like rusted out metal body
mm-hmm.
and swing open the back door for you to sit yep. in the back facing backwards.
Yep. There's a little strap that I hold on to so I don't slip out. It's happened before. Pretty bad. They forgot. They didn't turn back.
Yeah, there is no window in the back. It's nope. just yeah, it's
no, it's
open
like
air.
For cargo, really. It's not, it's like if you're in a pickup truck, there's technically a tiny seat, like plastic seat that folds down in the back of the cab, but yeah. it's not appropriate or safe. But that's where I sit.
Yeah. I mean yeah. this is like slightly better, but yeah, it is clearly like this is like no one wants to sit back here.
Yeah.
So amongst the honestly quasi-brainless prattle mm-hmm. of your adopted siblings,
yeah.
you ride off towards what's probably going to be just a tedious night.
God, Edgewater's going to be there. Oh my God. Had like 2 months where I didn't have to talk to her. Oh my God.
Yeah,
I immediately dissociate. I just... Good God.
Yeah, you haven't had a lot of interactions with your adoptive cousin, but... I mean, yeah. honestly, she's nicer to you than this.
Oh, yeah. She's really nice, but it's worse somehow. Yeah.
All right. And so now we are going to cut hard west, and we are going to zoom in on a bedroom. And we're going to look and see a figure cutting, a memorable figure in the mirror, bedecked in full tails. A powder blue ruffled shirt, a somewhat darker blue vest with a faded smiley face over one breast pocket, and sporting not one but two pocket watch chains,
ooh.
Which ooh. Are actually bike chains that do not end in pocket watches, but they're there. Shiny red track pants. And a pair of black canvas sneakers that have been refitted with tire treads for soles.
Oh my God.
I love it.
There stands the one and only son and sole heir to the Seltzer title, little future Lord Lefroy. Putting on.
Yeah!
Woo!
Johnny hasn't had any of his white claws.
He's been waiting.
It was worth it.
For the Foley moment.
Oh, man.
Putting on a top hat that adds a full foot to his height, bringing it up to a staggering 3'10", he looks up at you with expectant eyes as he grabs a small walking stick topped with a black orb bearing the number 8. So, what do you think, Mr. Thalt?
Oh my God.
Oh, no.
Well, my little lord, I think you look great. And I lean down and I take the clasp around the top hat and cinch it tight to his head because it keeps leaning off and falling back. And I pull it so it kind of like... It pushes his already kind of chubby cheeks even a little further out and kind of gives him a forced posture. And I give him a little pinch on the cheek.
Which, given your stature, is most of his face.
Yeah, I'm mostly prone at this point. Yeah.
So to explain that to everyone, who are we looking at? Who is Mr. Salt?
So this is Immortan Salt. This is Lord Lefroy's valet. Lefroy is a halfling, so and a child that's a quite small. And Salt is a his Goliath butler, tutor, bodyguard, and caretaker.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Salt. All right, so are we ready? This is so exciting. I'm gonna have to dance, right? Oh wait, no, this isn't a dance. I'm just going to have to mingle. Okay, mother said I should
take him by the shoulder and I go, my lord, you get to dance. Show me what we've worked on, and I kind of start to do a little back and forth two step and wait for him to join me.
Guys, I don't know if I can do this.
He starts.
Mm-hmm.
He is not good.
It's okay.
But he is trying. He's trying really hard.
Mm-hmm.
to say that Lefroy is young for his age would be a wild understatement. He is still of age to join the Ton.
This is his first year.
Yeah, this is his debut. But he, given the nature of his parents and just sort of him being the only child, he has been protected for his entire life. Mm-hmm. And he is extraordinarily innocent, which possibly led to his outfit, thinking mm-hmm. that more is more.
Mm-hmm.
So as his faithful butler, valet, bodyguard, tutor, how is Immortan decked out to go to this most inane of events?
Mm-hmm. So Immortan is wearing his formal coveralls. They're kind of like a mechanic's coveralls. They're his darker and cleaner of the two pairs that he owns. He is not wearing them yet, but once we leave the house, he'll put on his white-ish work gloves that he wears while on duty at all times. And then, because this is a first event in a kind of formula, he's busted out from his military days a pair of black leather boots that are said to be from the Timberlands that he found out and has tucked into his pants.
Excellent.
God damn it.
Oh, this is going to happen a lot. Buckle up, kids. All right. You do remember that Lady Pilar Seltzer wants to speak with both of you before you head out.
Great. So. In that case, I'll give Lefroy kind of one more look over. And as we kind of usher out of his room, I go, oh, little lord, have you remembered the gift for this evening? You wouldn't want to show up empty-handed.
Uh-oh.
And as he does, I reach into my coveralls, and since it's looking quite small in my hands, hand him a giant bottle of the Seltzer family's newest offering, a sparkling drink that has been dubbed Champagne at the Bit. And I hand it to him here. A wonderful gift to start the season, my lord.
So smart, Mithrithalt. You're very good at this for someone who'd never had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Happy. Anything for you, my boy.
Let's go get him.
Let's go see your mother.
Oh yeah, right.
So you go down to the main foyer of the Seltzer Mansion, and you meet with Lady Pilar, and she looks over Lefroy's outfit.
As we walk in, I give him a little nudge and bow myself, and kind of gesture for him to do the same.
And the hat fully just just down.
Oh well, oh, well, that is quite a striking look, my dear. Oh my boy, oh my little man, so excited for your first social function, and he is expressing himself. Mm-hmm. Oh, Mr. Salt, he is
sparkling, my lady.
oh, you. Well, let's let him make a splash. We can always tone things. It's always easier to pull back than to push forward.
Whatever you say.
All right, Lady Pilar is she is a halfling that clearly enjoys the little luxuries that her station brings. She is slightly curvier, slightly more bedecked with jewels and finery. Great deal of attention has been paid to like elaborately braided long auburn hair and very intricate, complex makeup. Not over the top or garish, but just very, very precise. Both her mood and her outfit could be described as bubbly. She's in almost constant motion.
Mm-hmm.
You can't remember a non-meal time where she has been actually stationary. She is very, very active. And that is sort of highlighted by the subtle crackling and popping of her dress. While the underlayer is a dark green sort of shiny fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Think lawn cleanup bags.
Mm-hmm.
The overlayer and shawl are completely composed of various types and dimensions of bubble wrap.
Mm-hmm.
So as she moves, she pops.
They're like, they refill over, like it never runs out of pop. Is that the?
It was a very expensive bit of artificing to get done, but it is so worth it because she enjoys it.
Mm-hmm.
And it does soothe her at times.
Mm-hmm. I think during his household duties, Salt very much appreciates it because it lets him know what she might be up to at any time and where he may be needed with any sense of urgency.
Yeah, you are primarily devoted to Lefroy, but you do also help out with the rest of the house.
Now, do try to put yourself out there, Lefroy. I want you to introduce yourself to at least five young ladies tonight. So, who are you going to approach?
Lefroy, full deer in the headlights.
Well, I would just thank Mr. Thalt. You remember Mr. Thalt? The lady that I was going to introduce myself to?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's Edgewater, Ms. Edgewater from the Clarence family. I believe the Sparks are have several children who will be attending. There will be lots of people that you could introduce yourself to, but those might be some good starts. We've met them before.
Okay. Yes, Mother. That is what I shall be doing with my socializing tonight.
And don't you worry, little lord. With your effervescence and an outfit like this, I'm sure you will not have to do any of the approaching. And I wink at Lady Pilar.
She rolls her eyes and again, oh you.
Was effervescence too much for you? This
was all too much.
Lady Pilar's husband, Lord Pierre, comes out, and he is as bubbly as she is. He is flat. Mm-hmm. He is like clearly an afterthought. Mm-hmm. But he's like, everyone ready? Okay, let's get going,
my lord.
All right. Oh, you're. Take care of the boy.
Always.
Good lad. Good lad. you head outside as you hear the carriage approach. Now, the carriage, it is it's not entirely accurate. Mm. It is more of almost like a rickshaw in build. it is basically yes. the... It is basically the back end of mm-hmm. a Volkswagen mm-hmm. Beetle mm-hmm. That has two long lengths of rebar welded to the mm-hmm. sides. And it is pulled by a centaur named Ford.
Okay.
To say that this individual is jacked would do a disservice to the term. This guy is enormous. Mm-hmm. The three halflings have no problem fitting comfortably in the back seat. It is
pop to a knee
spacious.
And one up them all into the. Yeah,
there are little stairs built in, and especially when Ford isn't actually mm-hmm. carrying it. You have a shelf that is welded to the back bumper and a couple of straps and a crash bar to help you hold on.
I think I installed that after the first couple of attempts of riding Ford in this. It was very uncomfortable for both of us.
Yeah, neither of you like to talk about it.
No.
It just, you're cool now, but it was an awkward day. Mm-hmm. It was just,
There was no saddle. It was,
you had to grab somewhere. Mm-hmm. So after everyone is in place, he looks back and asks, is everybody comfortable? And then mutters something under his breath. And you swear you see a small flash of green light as he places a hand on his chest. And then he picks up the rebar and you are off. Moving at quite the clip off towards the garden party.
Is this the first time I've seen the green light? Or does this happen when he...
This happens usually when he's about to start.
Okay, cool.
Like, you're kind of looking for it now. It's a little hard, especially because it is still sunlight, but there's a little bit of, like, you know, flash on the inside of his arm. You're mm-hmm. like, okay, I see what you're doing.
As I see him reach for where he touches for the light, I kind of reach into the opening of the back of the carriage and kind of tug at the top of the seatbelt to make sure that Lefroy is securely buckled in.
And he is. But this is sort of... almost a ritual mm-hmm. with you guys.
All that, Mr. Thalt.
And you take off. And finally, that brings us over to our last vehicle. And it is as it thunders down the road. Ruby, your father has decided that you're going to take the Ronco tonight. Just one of a fleet of vehicles at your disposal as the preeminent transportation mogul of Neo-Britannia. Your father, the Earl of Oxford, Lord Richard Gregory Rhinelander, has a somewhat nervous expression this evening. He stifles a light cough, but it's still loud enough for you to hear over the thundering hooves of the Erraticorns pulling the large utility carriage. He's been coughing more and more lately, but refuses to see a physician. Turning to you, He leans forward and takes your hands, his little halfling legs dangling off the spacious bench seat.
Are you looking forward to the party, Ruby?
I mean, I do love a party, but Daddy, what's the matter? Something seems to be on your mind.
Well, I mean, now, Ruby, I didn't want to come out and say it, but I don't want to put undue pressure on you, but it is high time you started to think about settling down. Now, I wish that your mother was still around so she could help guide you through this better, but you just can't keep turning down suitors.
But, Daddy, the people that I was engaged to before were boring.
Now, I need to stop you there. Let's just take a good, hard look at the fact that you had to say people and not person.
All right. I can't help it that multiple people are after me because of my good looks, short stature, and curvy body figure.
We're feeling forthright this evening, aren't we?
This is her father she's speaking to.
Yes.
If I had a nickel for every time I had to explain that to someone.
Mm-hmm. Especially my dad.
It's not my fault. I'm sure other people will be interested in me this year. But, you know, I would just really like for someone to, I don't know. I want to experience love at first sight. You know, I want to look at somebody and go, wow. Like, do you remember? I remember seeing the LaFroy's riding somewhere, and Mr. Salt was riding Ford. Like, I want that type of tension. You know?
Now, Ruby, I'm going to overlook the fact that you just decided to describe what you're looking for in an ideal relationship as the condition of being ridden, and
we're riding.
Brush on past that for the time being. Now I know that it's hardly surprising that you would draw attention. You're a very charming and outgoing young lady, but what you do have control over is how you lead these people on and to say yes if they were to ask.
All right, I guess I didn't realize I was leading them on the last two times. I just...
Those are the ones that actually went to the proposal stage. Don't think I don't know about the others.
All right, Daddy, nothing gets past you, I guess. But yes, no, you are right, Daddy. I will try my best this time around. I mean, it's the first party of the season. I have the whole season to see all the options that are out there.
You're not making your daddy feel better.
I'm sorry. Well,
but
you know,
I will say you have chosen quite the stunning ensemble for this evening.
Well, thank you. And you see, Ruby is a 3'3" halfling woman, with strawberry blonde hair in tight curls. She's blue eyes with freckles all over her face, and she is wearing a long red gingham dress that is clearly a picnic blanket that it seems to be burned on the edge, so there's like a little slit that's going up on her on her left leg, but it is burned, but the burn marks are encrusted with black diamonds, and she has a wicker purse with her and a parasol, but you notice that the parasol is also a flamethrower, and so when she pushes the button out of the barrel pops in a parasol.
Oh my god!
When you say black,
okay. What a woman.
Okay, hold on. I'm gonna claim primacy on this. Okay, so I when you started describing that, I went to Burgess Meredith as the penguin. The parasol is actually a flamethrower, as in she points the parasol and a jet of flame shoots out.
Yes.
We're going the other direction.
Yeah.
She is actually carrying like a flamethrower that actually pops out.
Like a bang flag.
Pops out
into a parasol.
Okay, that I was about to say makes more sense, but that's not the right phrase. All right.
Black diamonds. Do you mean chunks of coal? Is this like a barbecue aesthetic that you've gone for?
Yeah, it's like barbecue chic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like a little slutty.
Barbara Couture.
Yeah. Yeah. Barbara Couture.
Oh my God, Johnny.
Yeah, that's right.
Chic filet.
But yeah, that's what I'm wearing. You know, I thought garden party, I should look casual.
Ooh. And you have placed yourself so that your father is on the opposite side from the slit in the dress.
Mm-hmm.
Wisely so. So you're making your way down the road, and almost out of nowhere, there is a sharp crack as you go over a bump, and the carriage develops a pronounced shake. Nothing that's going to prevent you from a timely arrival to the party, but it's still notable. And now, just because I feel like it, first roll of the game, buddy.
Oh.
All right.
I'm going to need you to make a history check.
Ooh. All right. Oh, that's a 3 on the die for a 6.
I mean, that it's weird.
Super impressive.
But, you know, nothing really pings.
Yeah.
So your father, Richard, pulls a tube down from the wall and calls up to the driver. Abrams, what's going on up there? A voice comes from the tube in a few moments.
Nothing to worry about, your lordship. I think the rut may have broken one of the shock absorbers. I'll attend to it right away while you and Miss Ruby are attending the festivities.
Your father seems a little unsettled, but he doesn't respond.
Oh, is everything okay, Daddy?
Certainly, darling. You know, it doesn't give the best of appearances for the person who has a fleet of carriages to be showing up in a carriage that is not, you know, top of the line.
I guess so. That's all right. It will only be for a little bit. Don't worry. I'll walk out and everybody's eyes will just be on me instead.
Lord Ruby, you do not know how to settle a man's stomach. And just because, like, this is fun, now you get to make the second roll.
Ooh.
I want you to throw an insight.
Oh, I'm real good at this. We're not using that die
again.
Don't
do it.
Oh, so that was a 6, but it's -3. So that's a 3.
Oh, my God.
You are lost in the expectation of your grand entrance.
You're
looking at yourself in the window reflection.
How many? Yeah, I'm looking at myself. Wow, I look good today. Also, I wonder how many people are going to look at me. 1, 2, 3.
And that, everybody, is it for our first episode. Join us next time for Lady Southmere's Garden Party.
Ooh la la.
Oh,
will Samuel be accepted into this new society? Will Edgewater find a respectable match? Will Lumpy Sheik catch on this season? Will Salt's Charge make a smashing debut? Will Ruby's father's heart survive another conversation with her? Find out all or none of this on the next episode of Scandals and Scavengers. Thank you for listening to Scandals and Scavengers, a post-apocalyptic Regency romance with Daniel Began as Ruby Grace Rhinelander, Mats the Last as Lord Samuel Drake, Johnny McElerney as Second Lieutenant Immortan Salt, Emily Carmen Welton as Mary Smith, Beau Powell as Edgewater Clarence, and Evan Kelly as the Game Master. Produced by Evan Kelly, Trope Warden, Beau Powell.
Hey, this is Daniel. Thanks for listening. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, consider supporting us on Patreon, where we release episodes early, and you'll get access to our post-show cast discussions, Twisted Talks, our Discord community, and more.